Today's topic is that of how to use foods in the treatment of disease. Seventh-day Adventists were told over 100 years ago that we should experiment with foods in the treatment of disease. Well, I read this probably 25 years ago, but I didn't really understand it. I got the idea in my mind, yes, that means to have proper nutrition. I knew a little bit about how to treat diabetes using foods, but didn't cross my mind that, and we of course knew to restrict salt for hypertension. That was about the extent of our understanding of how to treat disease using diet or using nutrition in any way. Recently, I'm sorry to say, I wish we had thought of it ourselves, but we didn't. About maybe 10 years ago, there grew up an idea called designer diets. By that time, we did already understand how to treat the menopause syndrome using diet. We did understand a lot about how to treat allergies using diet. Asthma, you cannot successfully treat asthma unless you also understand how to treat it with diet. And we were treating hyperthyroidism and hypothyroidism using diet. So we had a number of diseases by then that we were treating with diet, but we still didn't understand how pervasive is this matter of treating disease using diet, how foods can help you. And then there were published a number of reports on the chemical makeup of foods and what that means in the treatment of disease or in the control of metabolic processes. Well, we were thrilled. And so you have in your hands, in your handout packet, a section called Food Chemicals for Disease and another one called Designer Diets. Do you see those two? Okay, if you will turn to Designer Diets, I would like to start with angina and talk with you just a little bit about how to treat angina using diet. Before Designer Diets were even named Designer Diets, we did already know how to treat angina. We knew how to treat angina before it was published in the medical literature, how to treat it using diet. The Lancet, which is probably the most prestigious medical journal published in the English language. The Lancet, it's a British medical journal. They came out with 4 cases of angina cured with diet. And the way that they treated it was the same way that we had been treating angina for 20 years by that time. And the way that they do it is given here, a vegan diet. That's no animal. What's the next word? Protein. That's right. Now, it had been understood in medical science that animal fat was involved with heart disease. But up until that time, nobody was talking about, or it was not widespread that people were talking about animal protein in heart disease. The French had had a school some years before that maybe protein might be involved in heart and artery disease, but it hadn't taken hold widely in the United States at that time. And so, but we had been treating it with a totally vegan diet since about 1970. So we were very well skilled in how to treat angina, but it's not only no animal protein, it is also no free fats of any kind, animal or vegetable. That would include all kinds of fats, olive oil, corn oil, sesame oil, any kind of free fat, margarine, butter, mayonnaise, fried foods, cooking fats, salad oils, and peanut butter. That would eliminate them all. So it's no animal protein, no free fats of any kind. And then the third thing is keep your extremities warm. Don't let a cold wind blow on your chest. And the fourth thing is learn how to walk through an angina attack. Now, angina is chest pain. If you talk with a person about angina, they will usually tell you that it is a gripping, crushing discomfort in the chest that is so intense that they would call it pain, but it's not truly pain. It's more a vice grip in the chest. And if you will help the person when they get the attack to learn to walk through it, and often it comes when the person is really exerting themselves a lot and they begin to feel the chest pain, tell them not to stop and lie down or even sit down, but to walk through the pain. Slow the pace, but walk through the pain. And that's, we have had cases who have been cured in as short a time as a week of angina, never had another attack. We had one man who had had angina for 18 years on all sorts of medication for his angina. It took a little longer for him, but within 4 weeks, he was totally free from pain, has never had pain again, and that was about 6 years ago. All right. Now, with angina, you can see that the treatment is very simple. I might add that I think it was 2 or 3 years after the Lancet came out with its 4 cases cured with this kind of routine, the Journal of the American Medical Association came out with 42 cases treated in this way, and 38 of them were cured with this routine. 4 of them, there was a question of compliance in those 4, and so it was not certain whether they had actually been able to stay on the routine. What the angina patient needs to do is a very small stroll. It's like this. Now, with moderate walking, I cannot tell you what moderate walking is because it varies with the individual. For a 92-year-old woman who has always been frail, a moderate walk is going to be far different than a 28-year-old woman who has been an athlete all of her life. And so what you must do is to pray, ask the Lord for his assistance to know what pace you should walk as a moderate walk. Now, let me point to the next one, and that is antibiotic functions. Licorice root has antibiotic functions. Garlic, onion, aloe vera, these all have antibiotic functions. In fact, one study that we did on garlic showed that the sensitivity, you may know that in laboratories, we not only culture germs, but we can also determine the sensitivity that that germ has to a certain antibiotic. When we checked common pathogenic germs, that is those that cause disease, we found that garlic was more effective for most of the very difficult to control disease-producing germs with antibiotics, that garlic was much more effective than the antibiotics. And I think that we will not develop sensitivity, resistant germs to garlic, because garlic's been around a long time, longer than most germs, most pathogenic germs have. And so I think that it's probably going to be an effective remedy for a long time longer. Yes, Pastor Rose.
The treatment for the garlic,
yes.
How it's to be used, which of your books contains that?
As to which of our books contains the remedies on garlic, it is our book, Home Remedies. We have a whole section on garlic. Then you will notice that bee propolis is also very helpful. Before I leave garlic, maybe I'd better say that garlic has many more properties than just that of its being antibacterial. It is also antifungal and antiviral. Let me challenge you, if you can tolerate it, the next time you begin to have a viral sore throat, within the first 20 minutes of feeling that I just might be coming down with a sore throat, take some garlic, 3 or 4 cloves, if your stomach can take it. Blend it in a blender with some tomato juice or V8 juice and drink it down. You don't have to drink it all at one time, and if the stomach rebels a little bit, give it a little time. It will, for some people, they are a little sensitive to garlic and they'll bring it all back up. Now, if you're treating asthma, that's a good thing to do. You will see asthma down toward the bottom of the first column. For asthma, you can saute garlic in oil, and that forms another chemical. It's very good in garlic. It will relax in asthma. It will relax bronchi. But notice that raw garlic tea, blenderized, is also very good. We had a woman one time who was a member of a little hippie colony close to Auburn University, which is only about 25 miles from our home. This little colony didn't believe in medicines. They were all back to nature. They didn't even believe in electric lights. They hardly believed in beds. Just the mattress on the floor was quite adequate. Well, out in the back, outhouse, really back to nature. They didn't go to doctors at all. They would tolerate us because they knew that we were vegetarian, and they knew that we used drugs very little. So if they got any kind of problem that they couldn't just meditate away, they would come to us. So this little couple had been meditating about her asthma since Friday, and it was Tuesday. And she had gotten no better, but worse every day. So by the time they got to my office, when I finished with one patient and came out to the waiting room, she was sitting there with her hands on her knees. Every breath, she would push herself up to try to get another breath. Exhausted from the 4 days of being in an acute asthmatic attack, and I could tell that her case was urgent. It was a drop everything and try to help her get so that she could breathe. So I told my nurse to take 2 cloves of garlic, blend them in 2 cups of water, pour hot water, and pour 1 cup into a cup and put a little ice in it to make it lukewarm. And then the other one, keep it hot and put some salt and some herbs and things like that in the second cup. So with the first cup, I gave it to her and said, drink this fast. Well, she was laboring for her breath, and it took her, she had to breathe several times in the drinking of the 1 cup, but I told her to drink it as fast as she could. Her stomach cooperated with us very well. She brought it all back up. Now, if you know physiology, you know that when a person vomits, they also produce secretions. They will produce tears, nasal secretions, saliva, stomach secretions, and bronchial secretions. That's what you're counting on. You're counting on they're producing the bronchial secretions so that it will clear out the dried, inspissated mucus that's been in there for as long as they've been laboring for their breath. And then, usually with the coughing that ensues, they will be able to breathe much easier. Within minutes, she could breathe a little easier. Then people go through what is called a refractory phase when they vomit, so that once they have finished vomiting, they can't vomit anymore. Not even if you gag them, they can't vomit anymore. That's called a refractory phase. If you will watch the patient carefully, you can usually hit it right on. So when I saw that she was in the refractory phase, I gave her the second cup. And I said, now drink this one. That one was still hot, so that it was not nauseous in itself. Then I only had to worry about whether the stomach could tolerate the clove, one clove of garlic. And the salt in it made it taste a little better. And so she got the second cup down and retained it. Now, the reason I wanted her to retain it is because the principle of garlic, the active principle, is secreted through the lungs. As it is secreted, it does the same kind of thing that vomiting does, except a little more gradually and slowly. She was out of the woods with her breathing within 10 or 15 minutes of her coming. She was not by any means well, but she was certainly breathing a lot more comfortably. Then we took her to Yuchi Pines, gave her some hydrotherapy, hot and cold to the back. You know how to treat asthma, an acute asthmatic attack? Do you have a good strong back? Would you step forward and let me show everybody how to? This is one of the things that you do when you get sick. Let your back be to the audience. That just like that. Now, what you need to do is to find the adrenals. Step this way just one little bit. You find the adrenals. And the way to do that is to find the inferior angle of the scapula, of the shoulder blade, right here. Then you find the waist on the same side. Measure halfway in between where your finger is on the waist and where your finger is at the angle of the shoulder blade. That is the upper, slide that around to the spine. That is the upper pole of the kidney. One finger breadth above that is where the adrenals lie. And then you cup your hand like this and you give a good sharp blow right over the adrenals. And it's done like this. So hold on. Oops, I didn't quite do it right. Step out just a little bit more. You need a good whack. I won't do it again on that side. I'll do it again on this side. You need a hollow sound, and I didn't quite make it. And it's better done against the bare skin. Hear that hollow sound? And then you rub it, because it may sting a little bit where you have slapped them. And that's a very good treatment that stimulates the adrenals, because any time you stimulate the skin, you automatically, reflexively stimulate tissues and organs beneath the skin in that area. And so that helps a lot, right? That helps them, well, not a lot, but it helps a little bit in the release of adrenaline. So that also helps them. You know that in the emergency room, we'll give a little shot of adrenaline sometimes to people who have a difficulty with asthma. Then another thing is tapotamab, which we do on the very same area. Tapotamab is you use the hands like jackhammers. This is called tapotamab. And you throw your fingertips into their skin as hard as you can, and she will tell you that was a little bit vigorous. And it's the same thing on the opposite side. You give it all you've got, pretty much. And then you rub it. Now, she should be able to stay awake during the rest of the meeting because she's a little bit of grin. Thank you. That's for the acute attack of asthma. But asthma is more than treating the acute attack. The acute attack is a failure. It represents a failure in your treatment. What you want is such a good maintenance program for the person who is asthmatic that they don't get acute attacks anymore. They may still have a little basic wheezing, but you want to try to get them so that they don't have acute attacks anymore. And that's the we have a counseling sheet on that. We also talk about it in our book, Natural Remedies, I think it is. We talk about it in our book, Home Remedies. And you should be able to handle an acute asthmatic attack, except when it's really severe, in which case you will need professional help. Don't hesitate to get professional help for an acute asthmatic attack, because people do, especially if people are on medication, they don't handle the acute asthmatic attacks very well. If they're not on medication, you can usually get them through an acute asthmatic attack without professional help. Our very powerful drugs work against us in an acute asthmatic attack. They worked for us during the maintenance time, but against us. And people who die in acute attacks often die as a result of the drugs rather than their basic disease. Now we talk here about reducing cancer risks, and we talk about cancer treatments. Let's go to cancer treatments. Although you should read the part on reducing your cancer risk, has some very interesting things in it that you will want to read, and gives the biochemical reasons why foods work in these ways. But notice this on treatment. Citrus fruits produce saponins. That should not be saponins, but S-A-P-O. P is in Paul. Saponins and trithexines, which are chemicals that assist us in the blocking of cancer reproduction, cancer cell reproduction. And the way they do that is by blocking estrogen receptors in certain tumors. Certain tumors, especially breast tumors, have estrogen receptors. Now, I'd like you to understand what estrogen receptors are. They are little ports or mouths that estrogen will fit into to be brought into a cell. So they're called estrogen receptors. We have many receptors. We have receptors for insulin, receptors for cholesterol, many receptors for sodium. So the cell should be able to take estrogen and bring it into the cell through these ports. And if estrogen does not come into this port, it cannot get into the cell. Same thing with all other chemicals. A chemical cannot just automatically go into a cell. And so what happens with estrogen in the breast, in breast cancer, is that estrogen, when it is taken into a cancer, a breast cancer cell, estrogen stimulates the growth of the cancer. Okay, you have the port here to hold estrogen, and this tamoxifen-like substance from citrus fruits comes in and fills up the port so that that estrogen cannot get into the port. It's already filled. And that reduces the stimulation that estrogen does for breast cancer. So it's very good in that way. Lignans function in somewhat the same way. They're from flaxseed. Soybeans have many different roles in helping us to control and to prevent cancer. And garlic. Garlic has some very good qualities. Licorice, parsley, celery, and carrots, and asparagus. We have found that asparagus will sometimes help people who have pain with cancer. It's always worth a trial. You start off the first day with one cup of asparagus, and then after that it's 1/4 cup. And sometimes people who have had a lot of pain with cancer will find that their pain goes away. Now, turn to the next page and you will find cystitis. And I'm very sorry about the table that's here. Unfortunately, the way that the table came out in the computer when it was being duplicated somehow, it mixed everything up so what I would like you to do, so that you will be sure not to forget it, is to take your pen and just X through the table. We tell things about it here in the top part here. We talk about cystitis. Also, this is not just the common ordinary cystitis, but interstitial. That should be I-N-T-E-R, interstitial. allergic and infectious. There should be an R inserted right after the E. Certain biogenic amines and metabolites of acidic foods can cause pelvic pain and increase urinary frequency. And so if you have that, the foods that are to be avoided should be those foods that are acid foods with certain exceptions. And so that can, if anybody would like to have something on cystitis, we do talk about cystitis in our book Natural Remedies, I think it is, and we have an updated handout on that. If anybody would like to have it, if you'll just write to me and tell me that you would like to have it, you were in the class and you'd like to have it, I'll send you the list, the table that we have here that got scrambled with the computer. All right, the next one is heart disease and hypertension. Notice that flaxseed and flaxseed oil both have the omega-3 fatty acids. We talked about that this morning, that it isn't only fish oil. When fish oil first was being touted as a treatment for heart and artery disease, I was wondering did the Lord make omega-3 fatty acids only in fish oils? What about people who didn't live near a body of water? What would happen to them? Were they just out of luck so far as omega-3 fatty acids were concerned? They were going to get heart disease and artery disease. And then when the research was done on fatty acids, it was found that there are many good sources of omega-3 fatty acids from vegetarian sources. Flaxseed is one of those. Most of the nuts are good sources, probably walnuts being among the best. Then you'll notice the three stalks of celery that we talked about this morning, and a salt-free diet, a diet that's high in magnesium. And here are those foods that are high in magnesium: wheat, oats, rye, rice, barley, corn, peanuts, carob, greens, beets, and squash. Now let's talk about macular degeneration. Macular degeneration is the commonest cause of blindness in the United States today. It is increasing in number, in incidence, and I suspect that it's going to increase far more since there is this new fad of taking an aspirin a day. Because aspirin increases damage to the macula. The macula is the place in the retina where we do sharp focus. The degeneration starts in the macula, in macular degeneration, and can spread so that it results in total blindness. Blueberries are very good to treat macular degeneration. If you like blueberries, you've got not only a good item of diet, but also a very good treatment for macular degeneration. It's also very helpful to prevent macular degeneration. Bilberry tea, which is a relative of blueberries, is also good. Bilberry. And then one doctor from Idaho reported an improvement in macular degeneration from pycnogenol. Pycnogenol is grapefruit seed extract, except that it's not called pycnogenol. I think that they call it maybe grapeinol. Does anybody know? Pycnogenol comes from pine bark. And we talked about ovarian cancer. And you will recognize here that it says avoid tamoxifen as it stimulates ovarian cancer and other cancers as well. Tamoxifen is only beneficial maybe in breast cancer, and there was a big question about that about 2 years ago. Did anybody read about that? There was the question as to whether tamoxifen helps at all with breast cancer, but it does stimulate ovarian cancer. So we're the tamoxifen-like food, citrus being a good substitute for tamoxifen, you can take that freely because it is not a big problem for you. Yes? Grape did I say grapefruit? Grapefruit seed extract is nutribiotic that has antiviral, antibacterial effects. I should have said grape seed extract is pycnogenol or grapeanol. Grape seed extract instead of pycnogenol. Grape seed extract is more potent than the pine bark extract, but the pine bark extract was found first, got on the market first, and there's a big hoopla about the benefits of pycnogenol. It will just cure almost anything that's wrong with you, from baldness to ingrown toenails almost. We have not found it to be so effective as the manufacturer thought it would be, and still says that it will be. Question over here somewhere.
I was just wondering, grape seeds, you know how, if you can see about the grapes, there are those immature grape seeds in there, if you know if that contains it or not.
I do not know. The question is, do these little immature grape seeds in seedless grapes, is that effective also? And I don't know whether that has been checked for the effective material, but to chew up the grape seed if you have a viral infection might not be a bad idea. And the same thing might be true of grapefruit seed as well, because grapefruit seed extract or a nutribiotic, that's the only trade name I know for it, but if you go to a health food store and ask for grapefruit seed extract and use that for as a great helper for viral diseases, it will help you a lot the next time you get a problem. Now, I always carry in my little bag, this is my little purse, I always carry a toothbrush when I'm going to be driving. Do you know why I carry this? It keeps me from getting drowsy. If I even think I'm getting drowsy, then I take out my toothbrush and just dry brush. And as long as you can hold out to brush your teeth, you won't go to sleep. I guarantee that. It's too much stimulation of the mouth. But now I'm noticing that some of you are having a little trouble right now. So I want to tell you how to handle this in meetings. Now, a minister told me this in North Carolina. So I'm going to tell you how to avoid drowsiness in meeting. This minister told me that if you hold your foot 6 inches off the floor, that you will not go to sleep. And he's right. As long as you can hold your foot up there, you won't go to sleep. Now, let's say you begin to get tired. Then don't just quietly lower it down. I think that this building is such that you could pound it down a little bit. Yes, we're on a concrete slab here. So if you will just lift your foot up and pound your foot down like that. The pounding is also stimulatory, and that will wake you up. That's a very good thing. Another thing is, if you're wearing glasses and you get drowsy, take your glasses off and open your eyes wide. Now, if you do that in church, the minister will wonder about your staring eyes. But that's also a good one, because it cools the eyes. Now, the opposite of that is true when you want to go to sleep. If you will put a cloth over your eyes, that will make the eyes get warm. And when just as we're going to sleep, the eyes get warm. It sends a signal to the brain, turn off everything. And so it turns off the brain and you can go to sleep. So that's a good thing to do. And if you will put it wet in a sort of like a little heating compress and cover it with plastic, works even better. That gives you then a little buildup of heat under the the plastic with a heating compress. We tell about heating compresses in our book and how to do that in our book Home Remedies. But you won't be able to do that this afternoon, but there are two other things that are very good to help you stay awake. One is take a man's handkerchief, wet it in water, put it in a little baggie and a Ziploc bag, and put that in your purse. Then if you start getting drowsy, you just take out the wet handkerchief and just unobtrusively you can just touch it to any part of your bare skin And that does very well too. Any place that you can find bare skin, you touch it to it, and that will help you to stay awake. But the thing that will help everybody to stay awake is one that's a never fail. Get a little perfume bottle, take a hypodermic syringe and needle, and pull, because perfume bottles usually have a very tiny mouth, and pull up some household ammonia and put it in the perfume bottle. Leave a little perfume in it. You will have what is called smelling salts. That's the old-fashioned smelling salts. Then, if you get drowsy in church, you just take out your smelling salts and you just hold it up there and give a good big sniff. You won't go to sleep. Not only that, it will wake up everybody around you as well. So that's something that you can do to stay awake. So right now, if you need to, go right ahead and do this. Now, let me tell you about yawning. Yawning? Yes.
Driving too?
Oh, yes. It does for driving, too. It's very good for driving. Any kind of perfume actually will work, but if you've got household ammonia in it, it's ever more effective. But, yes, about yawning. I wanted to tell you about that. I don't mind at all if people yawn in my classes. The research shows that people who yawn a lot do not get schizophrenia. And so I always like it if people are yawning in my classes because I feel very confident of them. But just don't close your eyes. Then I won't know whether you're awake or not. My husband says, well, I'm just resting my eyes, but I tell him that he needs to stay awake when I'm talking. Okay, you'll find one called, by the way, oh, and before we go to that, I wanted to show you the one on food chemicals for disease. This can be very helpful to you. We're constantly adding to this handout. It's food chemicals for disease. There are truly thousands of substances in foods that will help you to be well. Notice here, the food is listed on the left side, then the active nutrient name is given next. Now, some of you will appreciate that. These are biochemical names. And then the next column is the property that it has. Take, for instance, broccoli has sulforaphane in it, which binds cancer-producing agents. Do you see that? Binds carcinogens. Then the indole-free carbinols, that they are precursors of estrogen, and they fill up the little ports that we were talking about. And so they help you not to get breast cancer and so forth. You can see how to use this in avoiding disease and in treating disease. On the back has a number of other foods. There are many, many more than are listed here, some of which we're only now learning, and we don't even have them. We don't even know what they are yet, don't even have them named. Now, turn in your handout packet to what exercise can do for you. We spoke this morning about good posture and having a good alignment even when you're sleeping and how that helps you not to get heart disease. I did not mention the fact that a good full inspiration also assists you with digestion. It will also help you if you have a headache. Now, here is the way it works for digestion, to help you with digestion, to help you with a headache. If you have a stomach ache, it will help you. Just a deep inspiration will help you. Here is what happens. When you take a big breath, you do this. That makes a negative pressure in the chest. The negative pressure in the chest pulls blood up from the lower extremities, pulls it up from the digestive tract, pulls it up from the legs, and from the connections that it has with the back. The heart depends on your negative pressure in the chest to assist it in pulling blood back into the heart so that it can get a good full pump, has a full heart, so that it, when it pumps, it sends out quite a large volume of blood, gives a good stroke volume every time it beats. But it is dependent on having a good inspiration. So I'd like everybody right now, sit up straight. Take a good full inspiration. That's good. That's fine. Doesn't it feel good to your chest? Sort of relaxes the muscles and makes you feel really good. Okay, do that again. Another big inspiration. Now, when you did that, that helped your digestion. If you have a headache, it also helped you to relieve congestion in your head because it pulls blood down from your head. And besides that, it helps you to wake up a little bit. Don't you feel a little more alert than you did?
I have heard that you have to deep breathe in, pulling in the ear first and then exhaling.
Okay. You can do the deep breathing exercise by exhaling first, which takes out all the stale air that may be there. And we do have stale air in the lungs that that never goes down. It's always there. That is, it's always inflated. We do expect that there will be a circulation of gases through these air sacs that are not that are never fully. We don't ever fully squeeze out the lungs as we do the heart. The heart squeezes out fully, but the lungs don't squeeze out fully. They always maintain a little air in them. You can, by making a little forceful exhalation, you can start your inspiration that way if you wish. Now, are there other questions right now? If there are, would you raise your hands and let me give you numbers? Number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, number six. Did you have one? Number seven? Okay, we'll take these seven, and then I will present some new material. Number one. Yes?
I've read something
about
garlic. You have a migraine headache.
Garlic? Okay, the question is, can garlic cause migraine headaches? Some people who have migraine headaches are sensitive to garlic, but that's a peculiarity of that person. Some people who have migraine headaches are sensitive to oranges. But again, it's a peculiarity of that person, so it's not general. Good question. Thank you. Question number two.
What's happening in the breathing process if you hyperventilate and you have a tingling?
All right. What happens if you hyperventilate? Hyperventilation is that you have overbreathed and the carbon dioxide in the blood falls. That alters chloride in muscle cells. That gives you a spasm. That makes them extremely sensitive, and they can go into a spasm. Depending on which of your muscles are the strongest will determine whether you go into spasm this way. I've seen people go into spasm this way with the hands down, squeezed up like this, but arms out like this. And I've seen them with the feet out, with the legs out and the feet extended down like this. I've seen them the opposite way. I've seen them up like this, with the palms squeezed like this. And the legs drawn up right on the chest and the toes squeezed like this, and the feet flexed on the ankles. They can have whichever of their muscles is the strongest will give them the contraction right at that point. That's the full-blown case of hyperventilation. Far more frequently than that is you have a case of the flu. You're lying in bed and you have hyperventilated because you've got a little fever and you breathe too much. And so you get a little pain in your back right back here, or in the abdomen right here, or down here in a leg. And what is happening is that one muscle that's a little bit more sensitive than others, maybe it's a little cooler than your other muscles, or maybe it was overused yesterday, and for some reason it's more sensitive, and so it goes into a spasm and you have a pain right there when you've got the flu or when you've got some other infectious disease. That's a common scenario with hyperventilation. Do you know how to treat hyperventilation? Breathe in a paper bag, that's all you have to do. Or a plastic bag, any kind. Just you know how we used to do it when we were children? You just make a little hole in the bag and just... But then you didn't usually rebreathe it. But with hyperventilation, you breathe into it and then you breathe what's in the bag, breathe the breath that you've just breathed out, you breathe it back in again. You do that multiple times. Unfortunately, the person who has the flu, who has hyperventilated, they are usually air hungry too. And so they breathe one or two times and they can't stand it anymore. And so they breathe again too many times and they go back into their little spasm. Question number three. Yes. Okay, the distinction between angina and a heart attack. Angina is self-limited. It won't last longer than, usually not longer than 3 minutes, and most of the time it's a few seconds to 1 minute. A heart attack does not let up. It keeps right on. Angina will sometimes last 10 minutes or 15 minutes, but that's unusual. Most of the time it's less than 3 minutes. And so if you've got a chest pain that's been going on for some time, that may be a heart attack. Symptoms of cystitis are painful urination, frequency of urination, urgency of urination, sometimes blood in the urine, pus. This is a sign of cystitis. What is the sign of cystitis? And those are the signs. Did that get yours? Question number... Yes, it may be pain in the pelvis. Pain over the bladder. It can be an ache. It can be an ache that lasts for days. An ache in the lower abdomen or in the pelvis. It can be an ache sort of in the seat. Person feels it in the seat. Or it can be, they may think that it's the intestine or the colon with cystitis. Appendicitis? Appendicitis is usually associated with a high fever. One of the important signs, there is no sign with appendicitis that's 100%. It's one of the most difficult diseases to diagnose when it is difficult to diagnose. When it's a classical case, any eighth grade schoolboy can diagnose it. But when it's difficult, everybody comes in and looks at the patient, looks at the laboratory work, and we finally say, well, I don't know whether it is or not, maybe you'd better operate. Because it's felt, the current medical opinion is that it's better to operate and not have it than not operate and have it. I'm not so sure that that is true. It may be better to wait a little, especially with our current good surgical techniques. It may be better to wait a little and see if the diagnosis is clear. Well, at any rate, with appendicitis, one of the things is if they're lying in bed, they can't lift the head up off the pillow without lots of pain. That's a usual thing. Another thing is you get them to the side of the bed. If you'll remember this, it will help you to make a diagnosis of appendicitis. Get to the side of the bed and let the leg hang off the bed. When it hangs off, the backward position of the thigh puts a stretch on the psoas muscle, which is the deep muscle down beside the spine that's under the abdomen. And the stretch on that muscle gives them a lot of pain. That's another sign. Then another sign is stand up on your heel, on your toes like this, and pound down on the heels like that. And that hurts. All of those are, and you can also tell them to cough. And that makes them hurt. They have no appetite with appendicitis, as a usual rule. But one of the worst cases of appendicitis I ever had a voracious appetite. Had none of these signs. But when we finally decided to operate, person had an abscess already, appendiceal abscess. So it can be very difficult to make the diagnosis. Question number four. Melatonin has its pluses and its minuses. What do you use melatonin for? It is a natural product, comes from natural plant sources, but it may also come from animal sources, so you have to check that and make sure which it comes from in the case that you're buying. Melatonin is produced in the body by the pineal gland, which is a gland in the head about right here. If you drew a right behind and up above the ear, you drew a line across and another one right in the middle of the skull. Where those two lines cross would be the pineal gland, just behind the optic chiasm, and the pituitary is in front, the pineal is behind. The pineal produces melatonin. Melatonin helps you to sleep. So if you have a problem sleeping, you might consider taking melatonin. But melatonin has some not good things with it too. I don't remember everything about it, but you should be able to get it from a PDR, the physician's desk reference, just what its drawbacks are. It's a new thing on the market, and we need to not be the first to use anything new, usually. Okay, question number five. Yes. Okay. Good question. How much do you have to eat of vegetables and fruits in order to get these good properties that are mentioned in the designer diet? If we had to extract enough from it for it to act as a drug, you wouldn't be able to eat enough of it. Fortunately, though, the way that the Lord has made fruits and vegetables and the way He has made us, you only have to eat a normal quantity to get the good benefits of it. You may want to emphasize that food in the diet, as for instance, if you have a breast cancer, you may want to have a citrus fruit every day. Currently, I don't eat a citrus fruit every day. In the wintertime, I may eat a citrus fruit 5 days a week. But in the summertime, I rarely eat citrus, or never. But with breast cancer, it would be recommended that you would take it every day, throughout the year, maybe. And also, maybe other things that are high in lycopenes and terpenes and isoflavones and the like. You'd want to take those maybe every day. And just get a few of these that you like, that are easily available in your area, that are not too expensive, and emphasize them in the diet. Question number six.
What can be done for spurs on the feet?
Okay. Glad you mentioned that. Spurs, heel spurs. When we think of spurs, we think of what the cowboys have that dig into the sides of the horses. Well, that isn't at all what we have when we have a heel spur. A heel spur is simply a little thickening of the area where some tendons insert on a little ridge on the principal bone in the heel. We can see it on x-ray, see it a little thickening there. And so we can show it to the patient and say, see, here's the little bone spur that you have. But spur makes it have a connotation that makes the person think, well, I will have to have that cut out. But you don't have to have bone spurs cut out. You can cure them with hot soaks. Also, get a little piece of sponge and cut a little area from the central part of it and put it in the heel of your shoe so that it holds some of the pressure off the little ridge there where the tendons insert. But hot soaks every night, 30 minutes just before you go to bed, can be very helpful. Be careful to get good walking shoes that do not bang your heels as you walk. Number 7? Yes. 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 We do have a counseling sheet on lupus. The question was about the anti-inflammatory substances that we mention in designer diets, and we have counseling sheets on lupus, which is one of the inflammatory diseases. Many inflammatory diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease is probably a collagen disease. All the collagen diseases are inflammatory diseases. Asthma is often associated with inflammation. Many allergies are so that many of the anti-inflammatory substances will work in any of those diseases. We talked about headaches on the radio. I didn't plan to, but if I have time, I will be happy to this afternoon talk about headaches. Yes. What about arthritis? We have a counseling sheet on arthritis, a dollar, a self-addressed stamped envelope sent to me. We'll be happy to send it to you. Please don't send a small envelope. We'll be sending you a large sheaf of papers, so we'll need a big envelope. Legal size will probably do it unless you ask for a number of handouts, in which case you should send a big brown envelope. We also have a book that my husband and I have just written on arthritis. We had several arthritis seminars at UC Pines and had some extremely good results with our arthritis seminars. We learned a lot of things from them, and so we decided to write a book. We also reviewed the entire medical literature at that time, got everything that we could on arthritis that could possibly be used in a home setting, and we put that in the book. And so we're very happy about the book. My husband and I have finished our part. The printer has not finished his part, printing delays being what they are. I don't anticipate that it'll be out until the end of the year. But if you will write to me, we will put your name on our list of people to notify when it is published. Yes?
I wanted to ask if aspirin is not recommendable. What do you do for aches and pains?
All right. What can you do for aches and pains? There is a nice little aspirin substitute. It's a herbal remedy called white willow bark. You may also use wild lettuce. It has to build up a little bit in the system before it's effective, but it works very well. It has a salicylate in it also. And I used to be as afraid of the methyl salicylate as the acetyl salicylic acid, or the acetyl salicylate, which is aspirin. But I investigated this and found that there has never been a case of salicylate poisoning from white willow bark reported in poison control centers in the United States. Never been a case. And with as widespread as the use of it is, if there were any problem with the salicylate, it would have been. Now, with oil of wintergreen, which does have methyl salicylate in it, people can become intoxicated with that, but that's an extremely concentrated form, and I don't think a person would be willing to take the oil of wintergreen. It's very irritating and very pungent.
Well, it's an issue with that. What is it? Too much aspirin? Nowadays they're recommending, for
avoiding heart. Yes. I was recommended now a baby aspirin a day. If it's effective, it's too much already. because when it is effective, it is effective because it has poisoned your systems. See, it poisons the clotting mechanism. Whereas with garlic, garlic inhibits the antiplatelet stickiness factor. Works on a nutritive basis rather than a toxicologic basis or a pharmacologic basis. And so it's just much better to use the herbal remedies than it is to use the pharmaceuticals if there is any way that we can. The pharmaceuticals always come with side effects that are unwanted. I'll take one more question and then we'll go on to some new material. Yes. Can you take the garlic whole, just to swallow the whole clove? It will not do you as much good. You need to crush it in some way. All right. Let's continue with what exercise will do for you. I'd like you to read this entire thing. Would you notice item number seven, that it slows your aging process? You may not look any younger, but you will feel younger. You will live more fully. You will think better. But I don't know of anything that will cut down very much on the evidences of aging that the sun brings to us. The sun and the wind and the years will make us gray. Our stresses of life will make us gray and wrinkled, and I don't know of anything that will counteract that, except that the Lord is coming soon, and we can be thankful for that.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. International Copyright 2008, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you would discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. American Christian Ministries is not a one-man band. It is an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.